Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talking Flutes Extra this week. With me, the old flute geezer, or fluty honking gentleman, said in a different London accent, Jean-Paul Wright. A big shout out to our sponsors, TJ Flutes. Have been with us since we began this podcast malarkey nearly 7 years ago. Oh, God, please stop listening. Please, 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 please. Today, I am delighted to say we reach podcast number 303. Yes, 303. And ladies and gentlemen of the sideways blowing tubiverse, we have a real treat for you today. I last spoke with the flute player and composer Nicole Chamberlain in episode 132, published on October the 12th, 2020. That's a long time ago. And I'm delighted to say that I've managed to persuade Nicole, and she's really hard to get on here, but I've managed to persuade Nicole to come back on, along with a brilliant flute player, flute professor, Dr. Mary Matthews. Now, I should preface this with Dr. Mary Smiley Matthews, because every picture I see of Mary, she is smiling. In June of 2021, they released their first method book titled Beatboxing and Beyond, and they now have a brilliant second volume titled Into the Beyond. So, hello, Nicole and Mary, and so wonderful that you could join us today, pretty early as it is over your side of the pond. So, welcome, welcome, welcome. And before we speak about the wonderful new edition, Into the Beyond, can we row back to the popular beatboxing and beyond, an essential method for the 21st century flutist, and I'm going to shut up in a second, where you introduced and provided practice techniques and materials for 14 of the most common extended techniques. So firstly, what made you come together to collaborate on this, and how did you choose the 14 extended techniques to include in this valuable tutor book? I can stop breathing now. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Nicole and I, we're over 10 years now, and we met through just a cold email that she sent me online. She had just composed Chatter, one of her really popular duos for two flutes. And then I was playing in a flute duo, and she found us and asked if we might be interested in premiering it. And so we premiered it later that year at the International Alliance for Women in Music conference. And that's the first time I think we met in person.
No, we met at the Charlotte NFA.
That's right. Just about a month before.
Yeah, a month before. Yeah.
Yeah. And I loved her music. I loved our collaborative process and just the way that she gave feedback, and we just got along really well. So, you know, we became friends first. And then of course that led to future just collaborations that came out of hanging out and shared ideas and interests. And for a really long time, both of us were teaching various age groups. I teach, and at the time was teaching little Suzuki flutes, 4 years old, all the way up through high school and college students. And Nicole is an active, you know, teacher. And at the time you were teaching a lot of high school, middle school age students, in addition to composing and performing. So for many, many years, we talked about, just as an idea, like, you know, we should have a book. There should be a book where we talk about how to do all the techniques and have a really clear explanation and definition and try and bring together maybe different terms we use for all of these techniques. And for me, it was really a teaching need. And for Nicole, it was both a teaching need, and she would get a lot of emails, right, from performers asking, you know, for guidance on how to play these techniques in her music. So for a very long time, it was just a, what if we did this someday? But we, of course, we didn't have time because we kept ourselves very, very busy. And then when the pandemic hit, and, you know, early on in 2020, when we found ourselves suddenly with more time, we just started talking about the idea a little bit further. And then I think one night we just said, you know, we should finally do this. When are we ever going to have this much time again? So we call it our pandemic project now, lovingly. And so as we wrote, Nicole would write the etudes, she would send them to me, and then I would flesh out descriptions and the breakdown step by step, break it down, build it up. I'm also so thankful to my students. I was teaching at Tennessee Tech at the time, my college students, and Nicole is teaching her private high school students. where we would actually give them the etudes and have them workshop some things. Or we would ask them, you know, they're playing a new Ian Clark piece, new to them, and say, what's challenging about this extended technique and what would you like guidance on in learning it? So it ended up being a really collaborative process that really we worked on most of 2020 and then beginning of 2021.
Yeah, I think why we decided to do the techniques to use was because we were finding what was the frequent inadequacies of performances of some of the extended techniques that we were finding. The questions we were getting from our students, the questions I was getting from ensembles, and we felt like we're always repeating ourselves. Mm-hmm. And also common pitfalls of all of those extended techniques, like the jet whistle, finding the right placement of it. The beatboxing, how much tone do you do and how much tone do you not use when you're beatboxing? And, you know, pizzicato, like the back pressure when you're playing a lot of them in a row. And also what was common in the repertoire, right? Because it's not only for me, like I'm benefiting quite a bit from it, but there's other composers that are in the same boat. And like, I wish there were books like this for other instruments for me. I mean, I'm lucky I play flute, but I have a composer friends that don't. And hopefully this helps them too to get their stuff performed more and kind of eliminate the fear of starting a piece, because we found a lot of the pieces that had extended techniques, it was like being thrown into the deep end of water. There's no ease in, there's no like shallow end to this pool with extended techniques. You just have to like drown or swim. And so we wanted to ease that in. And so we were kind of set the book up for the more advanced player, a pretty good foundation and extend their palette of technique. And also in the pursuit of that, also improve their traditional playing, which we were finding out in the quartet I was in. It was with three other very established players who felt like their playing had kind of plateaued. You know, you get to a certain time in your career, and you're just not seeing big, vast improvements of your playing. And we found when they let me in their ensemble and I wrote French Quarter and we did Tamar and stuff, they had these ladies had to start learning beatbox and all these things. And we were finding improvement in their playing. Like one player, she had issues fighting in the third octave. Like it was never great for her, never easy. And she found it more easy. And we were all talking about our endurance had improved and all these other things. And so we found those benefits as well. So a lot of my workshopping came from working with that ensemble, which I was grateful for to have that support for a very long time. Yeah. And so that's why we picked the techniques. I don't know, Mary, what did I miss?
I think so. You brought up a great point, which is, you know, a big part of our book and how we divided up the first book. It was by traditional flute skill that could be improved by practicing this extended technique. And we did that for two reasons. I think the first is that for our current generations of flute students that are in school, I think it's really common that they're introduced to contemporary music and extended techniques, and they see these techniques in music and rep first. But I know when I was studying in high school and in undergrad, oftentimes we would first see extended techniques as a tone exercise, like seeing harmonics for the first time in Trevor Wise's tone book and singing and playing as a remedy for throat noise and throat tension, or flutter tonguing as a way to relax the tongue and ease the tongue. So there's just so many benefits to these extended techniques in our tone and in our projection and sometimes confidence or ear training skills that we develop differently as flutists. I talk a lot about in the ear training section of the book how young brass players and young string players are really listening, you know, intervallically and have to hear pitches in order to make sure they're playing the right note, in addition to just fingering the right note. Whereas we in the woodwind family, you know, sometimes we can get away with just if we're pressing the right keys, we'll get the right notes. And I'm married to a trumpet player, so I really quit him in writing that section. I said, so you learned ear training and singing intervals as a fifth grader starting off on this instrument. And that was very different from me, you know, starting off on the flute. So that was a big part of just traditional flute skills that we thought everyone could benefit from. But we also wanted to make sure that this resource was not just a niche interest only for people who love new music and want to perform a lot of new music. We really see the benefits. Whether you only want to perform Bach and Mozart and earlier music as the main part of your career, there's still a lot that we can gain from studying extended techniques. And also the rhythms and the range and the register that goes along with extended techniques. You notice in Nicole's etude, she incorporates a lot of work with mixed meters and frequently changing meters. So we're emphasizing, you know, those extra musical ideas that come along with 20th and 21st century repertoire, in addition to the extended techniques themselves.
So you find that tension is the killer for a musician. So if you've got any tension in your body or your throat, then everything is affected, whatever music you're playing. The thing with extended techniques, as I found many years ago when I started doing the Robert Dick stuff, was all of a sudden the tension is drawn away because you can't do it if you're tense. So for anyone listening that is scared of extended techniques, it actually fundamentally improves you as a flute player and as a musician.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And for me, my biggest challenge as a player in my undergraduate degree was throat tension. I was getting a lot of throat noise and everything that I was playing in tongue tension. And so I, you know, learned how to sing and play just as a diagnosis, or after diagnosing the issue, as the remedy for fixing the issue, long before I ever was bold enough to play a piece where I had to sing and play on stage.
Yeah. I mean, and we find it even with extended techniques, people are afraid not to play beautifully. And this kind of also helps break that fear of always sounding beautiful. I mean, there's a time and a place to be a little nasty, for lack of a better word, and to be unpolished and not fearing the failure of not making the proper sound. I think there's a lot of hangups with musicians in general, but especially flutists, to just have that pure, beautiful tone. And myself, I don't think I was ever great at that pursuit. So maybe that's why I went down this route. Well, if I can't do that, then maybe I could do this thing over here where I'm, you know, more of my personality to be a little more silly, or, you know, do things that weren't, the flute wasn't really intended for. But it has helped. I feel like it has helped my tone. I don't know. Mary's probably listened to me more than anybody ever, even my flute professors, because you've been with me more than any, longer than anyone.
Longer now. Yeah. She has a beautiful tone. Yes, I can attest to that.
It was the bait. I'm glad you took it.
I would never tell her that to her face, but
no. Don't, I'm uncomfortable with you being nice to me.
I'm so sorry.
Now, for those of you who are not watching this on the video, Nicole has got a flagon of, looks like tea, 5-liter jug of...
It's coffee? It's 12 ounces of coffee? Yeah, your tiny cup.
In sizes, I have the tiny one. Mary comes second, and Nicole is way out ahead.
Or either my head is really tiny. There's no way to know.
I have my comically large water bottle next to me also that is smaller than my head.
Okay, Mary always likes to be the winner.
Yeah.
So you decided to do this project. Now, it's okay to say, right, let's do it. How do you start? What is the first thing you do to start? And then how do you sort of create the skeleton? It's okay saying, yeah, we're going to do it, we're going to do it. But that first step is always the hardest, isn't it?
Yeah. So let's see. I think the first step, we decided which extended techniques we wanted to include. We made a list. We made the list from all of the most common flute rep being performed with extended techniques, being taught. So I looked at, you know, all the rep that I have recommended for undergrads and then professionals. And then we divided. So we came up, we said there are 14 that are common enough in our repertoire that, you know, this feels like a comprehensive book, but also not too much. We didn't want to overwhelm. And then we broke down the sections by what traditional skill will this improve. So we kind of categorized, these techniques all improve tone, and these improve ear training, and these can work on projection coordination. So then we had our rough sections of the book. And then after that, Nicole just started writing the etudes, and then she would send them to me and I would fill in. So I made an outline of what we wanted the descriptor to include. So we wanted common notation. We wanted a brief, just one sentence definition of how you would describe this extended technique. And then especially as a professor and a longtime teacher, my brain always works in what is step A, B, C, D, E, F, G that will eventually lead us to this technique. So that's how I wrote the break it down and build it back up again step. So do this first, then this, then this. And I think the last thing, correct me if I'm wrong, Nicole, I think the last thing we added was the repertoire list. So after they learn all of these extended techniques and hopefully get excited about them, we wanted people to then be able to go and find a solo work where they could study and explore this technique further. So we included at least two pieces with every etude, and then we made a guide in the back with, you know, publisher information, composer information, where people could go find it.
You have the linear guidance that you want to do. The creative side, when you've then got to compose an etude that fills in everything that you've discussed, how would you do that? And how does the brain function when you're trying to capture something that is creative and yet meets a brief that you both want?
Mary's pretty good at that stuff. I usually sometimes feel like I'm Mary's employee or grad assistant. She comes up with these ideas and there's very good follow through. You know, I always feel like people have great ideas and they start on it, but they don't complete it. And we kind of set ourselves an artificial deadline to do that. Am I answering the question? I'm not answering the question, am I, Mary?
Do you want to talk a bit about the compositional process? So was the process of writing etudes where you were trying to teach a skill different than if you were just writing a piece that wasn't an educational? Yeah.
In some ways, this one, it was kind of, usually I just kind of write a piece and then the extended techniques kind of fall in naturally for me. But this one, there were some parameters, which I always love a good parameter. If we were doing, for example, Jet Whistle, for example, I would start it out by just doing the one note with a break, one note, one Jet Whistle with a break, one Jet Whistle with a break, and then incorporate it and add complexity as it goes throughout the etude. So someone can at least get it started. Like do the first line or two and start to build confidence and then build it up as they went down into the complexity of the piece. So a lot of ways is very loosely like a theme and variation. You know, you just kind of start very simply and then rehash and try to make it something else. So that kind of was my approach for all of them, but also make them still standalone compositions, because a lot of etudes feel like studies. I wanted to feel like something people could also perform, because we all know that performance solidifies the skill.
Yep.
And the more you perform a certain piece, the better it feels and the better it gets, the more comfortable it is. And so I wanted these etudes to feel like completed pieces that people could perform on a recital if they wanted to ease into doing something bigger and more complex, like Ian Clark's or something else, you know.
So you're both creatives and you're musicians and you're flute players. How do you know when a project is finished? Are you perfectionists and you keep going backwards and forwards? Who then said, we're ready to go?
I think this is where we balance each other out really well.
Yes.
I think Nicole would agree. I'm the type A perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And I will literally keep editing something over and over again until, you know, we're 6 months later and it's not released yet.
So, she's still trying to correct stuff.
Usually it's one of my students are studying it and I'm like, oh, we've, you know, there was a typo here or something. And then I panic. So we had our initial draft that I edited it extensively and you edited. And then we had a Zoom call where we just went through everything. Mm-hmm. And then we have two phenomenal family member musicians who are our editors, who agreed to be our editors for this book. One is our dear friend, Matt Angelo, who's a flutist. And then the other is my husband, who is a trumpet player, but also a teacher and has a doctorate in music. And so it was great having both of their perspectives. Both are highly trained in, you know, editing and writing. And then Matt could provide us with the flute perspective, where he actually picked up his flute, tried everything, played through it. And then Brandon gave us that outside perspective of, is this a flute word? I'm not familiar with this thing.
Or going on too long about something, you know, like he hates a lot of talk.
Exactly. Yeah. He edited my dissertation when I was working on my doctorate. And he was the person who would always just say, you're going on too long. Let's stop here. Or in the book, he said, you're being academic Mary. And we don't want academic Mary here. We want teacher, more fun Mary, you know. because there is a difference in tone when we're writing mm-hmm. a dissertation or a peer-reviewed journal article versus a method that we want to be really approachable and accessible to everyone.
This method is completely accessible and written in language that everybody can understand.
Good. I'm so glad. I think a lot of that comes from, you know, some suggestions from my husband, both in just accessible language and also understanding difference in tone of, you know, academic versus accessibility.
And he knows just enough flute to be dangerous. So like,
exactly. Yeah. Is that true? You know,
Nicole, you're scaring me. That's the dangerous word more than once in a flute podcast. So was it always in your line of composition sight to have a second volume, Into the Beyond, which is for flute players looking to level up their extended techniques? So taking the first book and then sort of graduating up, sort of taking it further by alternating between techniques and that layering techniques.
Mary has played a lot of everybody else's rep. She's played a lot of my rep, but a lot of everybody else's too. And where I've kind of like gotten pigeonholed a little bit more. And, you know, when we were doing the initial list for the first book, a lot of that was coming up. Like, well, sometimes people layer it. Sometimes people combine it. And we're like, well, maybe that's too much for this book. Maybe that's for book two, we would say jokingly. But then it kept coming up so many times that it felt necessary that this was going to be a series rather than a one and done. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of put that aside. And we're like, well, we'll see how this book does. And if it does well, we'll continue. And so when did we start with second book? Like, I feel like this whole year has been a lot. So I don't remember for both of us. And I don't remember when we started, but it feels like we started, we had like life.
And then we decided to
circle the wagons and try to get it done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think when we were writing the first book, we saw really two major steps that we felt would take a person from never having played any extended techniques to playing something like Ian Clark Zoom Tube, that's one of the most popular pieces, especially for my undergraduate students. And as I was trying to teach it before we had either book, I was finding it would just take so long to learn all of the extended techniques. And then once you learn them individually, then be able to put them all together and then be able to pair it with all of the other things that are complex about a piece like that, like the rhythm or, you know, key signatures. So we felt like we couldn't just jump right in the first book with doing two extended techniques at the same time if we are working with people who haven't done any at all. So we felt like that first step should just be one extended technique at a time, one etude. And then in the next one, we could start to either go back and forth between the two, which we see in a lot of our rep, and then the second half play two at the exact same time, which we also see in a lot of our flute rep, with the hope that once you get through both, you would be able then to handle a piece really just on a shorter timeline or feeling more confident or feeling just less afraid to start a piece like that. Because that's what I hear from my students more than anything is just, not that they're not able to do it, but that it's really scary getting started because everything looks so new to them.
It's overwhelming. I mean, you open up a piece of music and it's like full of fingerings and odd looking note heads and double notes. And your first reaction is like, you know, close it, you know. And Claire Chase talked about this too in her approach. I went to a performance and she had a little Q&A after. And she's like, sometimes I get music from composers and I open it up and I'm like, not today, and just close it. And she's like, I just have to like build up the courage. So even she's also playing crazy complex music. But it was endearing to hear someone else have the same gut reaction. And so we wanted to kind of like help stop that as much so people feel very, very fearless in tackling and say, oh, well, it looks scary, but don't be afraid of the ink on the page. Like you just have to learn the language of the composer first of how their brain is working in that. And then it's not so bad once you get inside their brain, you know.
I like the term fearless because as musicians, we tend to, a lot of musicians tend to sort of go along this line of what is comfortable. And what is comfortable very rarely gives the performance that makes one happy or gets the audience to have the hairs on the back of their neck stand up because we're not being fearless. We're not taking risks. And the extended techniques and the use of extended techniques takes people out of their natural comfort zone that they've learnt over the years. You know, the roots that they've had hasn't necessarily over the years, certainly people in my age, have never included the extended techniques. Mm-hmm. So with lots of ladies coming back to flute playing that gave up many years ago, and loads are now coming back because they've got children, the children have grown up, and they've got this craft they used to do. Extended techniques is this sort of anathema that is hidden away and won't go there. But your books make them accessible. And it actually opens up the fact that as soon as you start doing extended techniques, suddenly things come back quicker. Your sound comes back quicker. Your use of technique comes back quicker.
Yeah. And also, I think we stay really engaged while we're practicing too, right? It's easy when we're just practicing the same things that we've been practicing for 10, 20, 30 years to check out or feel like, you know, we're stagnating and get bored. And so I think trying something new, and I tell my students all the time, like, don't reinvent the wheel, practice all the things you're already supposed to practice, like your scales and like your tone exercises. But there's no reason why you can't beatbox Tafnell and Gobert number one, or add a flutter to Tafnell and Gobert number one, or pizzicato tongue. So we also hope that it will help people feel more engaged in the practice process when, you know, I think all of us battle against boredom or checking out, you know, when we've been playing an instrument for a really, really long time.
You got to spice up that relationship with your flute, especially if you've been playing for decades. It helps you look at it a little bit differently. I mean, and I've heard that a lot from players, like Mary said, checked out a little bit, especially in flute choirs that are playing a lot more of my music. The flute choirs tend to have a lot of people that have reignited their relationship with their flute and come back. Flute choir is really great for, you know, finding people that share your interest, but you still get to perform. And so that's where these extended techniques have started creeping in. And it's just so wonderful to watch people like fall back in love with playing their flute again, because this has been new and exciting, something very new. Because I was in the same boat. Like my professor, you know, he retired the year I graduated, and he had, you know, he knew it was up and coming, and he was trying his best to like, this is what you should be playing. You know, I mean, you're a composer, you should be doing this. And my composition professor is like, you need to be writing this, you need to be doing this. But he was a bassoon player, but he loved extended techniques too. So we talked about that a lot, and just trying to help me the best I could. But to be honest, it was not until I was out of college and Greg Petillo came to Atlanta and I went to a workshop and I was like, that's so fun. I want to learn how to do that, but that's not my voice. Like, he's got his own unique voice about how he incorporates it. And I wanted to see if it would work from my standpoint. And yeah, I think it's been really great for my own playing, my friends playing, and people all the time come up and said, I never thought I would be this person.
I love the terminology. We need to spice up our flute playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like any relationship, right? You let it go stale. It's just gonna,
I knew you'd come out. Somebody would come out with that. I nearly did, but yeah. But we don't consider the relationship, do we, with the flute? We don't consider the fact we spend more time with this tube than we do with our partners.
Yeah, with our students too. It's to have a guide where you can work through something on your own to a certain extent. It's also empowering. It's you don't have to wait till next week's lesson for your teacher to sit and talk about how to do it and explain it, especially when we're in lessons regularly. You know, that feeling of like, well, now I have to wait four more days to figure this out because I just feel stumped. And now I can just give them the etude and say, go practice this for the week and then come back and it's mostly there and I'll tweak it. But they can really take charge and take ownership of their practice. And I think that's a really good and positive, you know, relationship with practice and their instrument, you know, something that I've seen grow through this too, which I like.
Yeah. And I had the same with some of my more advanced younger students, you know, my high school students that were really inquisitive about flute playing. They would take the book home and I would just kind of give them like a little introduction and then they'd come back and I was always floored. And like, they actually read, you know, which is not something I was doing at their age, but I think that goes to show how much more advanced my students and more inquisitive they are than I was at that age. Mary's breakdown and build them up and explanations have been really key. And I've learned tips too, when I would just like reading through, I'm like, oh, it's interesting, you know. So that book has been very helpful for those students that you just don't know what to do with. You know, they're in high school and they're just trying to, they're not, you know, they're going to go on and leave you soon and you got to find them something more interesting to do than the standard rep. Yeah.
I just wish it was around when I was learning. because my studies, I probably could last for about 2 minutes and my mind would just sort of go off.
Wander.
And
yeah.
And then I'd go back to my lesson and he'd say, your pitch is disappearing straight away. Have you been practicing properly? Have you been mindful? Have you been doing everything as a note? And but now, as you say, you've got this and it's the spice and it gives you the key to stay there because there's an interest.
Yeah.
Right.
And you find these extended techniques in nearly every modern day recital now, don't you? It's very rarely a sort of a linear program. You can go from Bach and, well, let's face it, if Bach was around today, he'd most definitely be including these things in it.
It's fun to think about. Yeah. And even on this side of the pond, you know, there's bands, wind ensembles in every school, and it's been showing up in the middle school and high school level.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
So like in the bands, like the flute sections and the other sections too, and especially the percussion, you know, I have a student walk in and said, what is this? And I'm like, oh, well, here we go. You've come to the right person. So then that just opens a can of worms. I mean, you know, it's younger and younger. And I feel for these band directors that were lucky if they had extended technique on their home instrument, their main instrument. And now like they have to teach it on other instruments. It's tricky, I'm sure. I mean, it may be something Mary and I should talk about down the road.
We have toyed with the idea, you know, because we want to write several more books in this collection. And we have toyed with the idea of an extended techniques books geared toward even younger students. Because Beatboxing and Beyond, we sort of imagined it as either, you know, high school, undergraduate, or people who have been playing the flute for a very long time but are new to extended techniques. But we both have a lot of experience working with really young players. And, you know, like I said, I have Suzuki certification and we've taught. Nicole, don't you have a student now who's seven or eight?
Yes. Oh, my God. She's keeping me on my toes.
Yeah.
Just saw her last night. Yeah. It's just it's always something.
Right. So we feel like, why not bring this really unique combination of experiences together of teaching really young students who are just introducing themselves to flute and to the world of music and extended techniques all at the same time. So it's not an idea we fully fleshed out, but it's definitely on the list.
It's right here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it grows the roots, doesn't it? The roots that we begin our studies with and our scales and our long note. We have to do that because it gives us the roots of our tree, the musical tree. If you're introducing that earlier on in this the flute playing cycle, surely the roots are going to be thicker and deeper. And as you grow up, this tree will be willing to sort of move with the wind and not be so sort of stuck and rigid.
And sometimes it's stunted. Like I have one student, he was jet whistling before he started when he played. Like that, instead of just blowing hot air into his flute, he was jet whistling and not knowing what he was doing. And some band directors or some teachers would be like, don't do that, you know? And I was like, you know what that is? And he's like, what are you talking about? And so we would expand on it and, you know, and then find out, then I come to find out this kid beatboxes, but not on his flute.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so I started last summer because he's also one of mine that doesn't enjoy practicing as much or just really busy, very athletic and does a lot of athletics. And then I started put that flute on his face with beatboxing. He just takes off with it. You know, it's just missed opportunity because the kids are fooling around and experimenting anyway on their flute, being funny. They think they're being funny. And it's like, well, actually, you're doing something very legitimate and let's...
Yeah.
And since you have a natural talent for it, let's explore that more, you know? And I feel like there was an old school way of just like, you must always play proper. And so that kind of gets squelched really early. And these younger students that are just experimenting on their instrument and just want to encourage that more. Yeah.
So using your experience of teaching and playing, how do you feel the encompassing of both the extended techniques and the classical way of performing, when you combine them both on your students, do you see a lot of different type of creativity? In other words, the expansion of when you're talking about tonal colors, they understand more about what you're talking about because they've got both sides of this playing perspective.
Yeah, the contrast of it, right? Because I think sometimes when we talk about tone color, they're just, you know, just like little kids don't have the
the flexibility here yet to play, mm-hmm. you know, their traditional flute. It's kind of like they also don't hear the small differences in intonation. And these contrasts of extended technique and numeral tone helps them find tone color a little bit more relatable in a way, because they yeah. can really hear a big difference versus like playing cold and warm. It's a little harder for them to perceive because they're just not, their ears just not developed yet. I mean, I know, Mary, you got some thoughts because you've taught some real littles.
Yeah, I find myself uttering the phrase a lot, regardless of their age, that it's not so much right and wrong. It's just, as flutists, we have to be able to do everything, right? A great variety of articulations, tone colors, dynamics. And it's about being able to do all of the things and then also learning when it's appropriate to use each one. So if they're getting a sound that's maybe more diffuse or more airy or something like that, what a great opportunity to talk about like Aeolian air sound. And, you know, we see that in these pieces and we're going to use this sometimes. And now we're going to work on fostering the other side of the tone, right? Which is something that is a little bit more focused or darker. So I think it's really extended techniques just kind of expand the palette. If we think of our tone colors and our articulations and our dynamics as a palette, we just have more colors on the palette when we include our extended technique. And I think it makes people of a younger age, if we word it that way, just more encouraged and more excited and more willing to try. Because if they're constantly being told it's wrong or it's bad or this is the one way, and if you're not doing the one way, then you're wrong. You know, that's the age that we lose a lot of students. That's when they quit. You know, they're not feeling motivated, right? And we hear the phrase a lot. People say, oh, well, it's not fun anymore. And I say, it doesn't always have to be fun. I don't think it's necessarily a fun versus not fun. Anything in life is going to have its ups and downs. But I do think it's that motivation and the belief in yourself that you'll be successful in this thing down the line. So I'm really mindful of how, or try to be, of how we're wording those things, you know, to yeah. young students in particular. Yeah.
Aeolian's a good example, because when we do introduce that to yeah. more develop students, like, well, I just sound like trash. Yeah. I'm like, well, no, that's not the... Yes, I know. Playing airy tone, it's a thing. It's like there's appropriate times, and this isn't it, you know. And that pushback, they don't want to do it because they're afraid people think they can't play the flute.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's when we can just say, hang on to that. We're going to play this piece in 5 years, you know, yeah. where we can use it. Yeah.
Can I congratulate you on the titles? They are completely noble titles. You get it. You know, a lot of people struggle with a title of a music or title of a tutor book or a title of anything. It says exactly what it does on the tin in those words. Beatboxing yeah. and beyond.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, we saw that beatboxing was the trendy thing. Mm-hmm. People are a little like, they want to know about it, but also there's other things to explore as well. And we felt like we didn't really need to make a beatboxing book only. I mean, those are already out there, like thanks to Greg Battillo, but like we wanted to do something a little bit more universal, I guess.
Yeah, the subtitle of Beatboxing and Beyond, the essential method for the 21st mm-hmm. you know, century musician. You know, we said we were writing it during COVID and during lockdown times, and this word essential was popping up constantly, mm-hmm. right? We had essential workers and essential activity. And so I think that was a buzzword on our brain at the time. And when we did early interviews about that first book, when we released it, someone asked us, is this an essential method or is this just a buzzword that we're all thinking about right now? And I'm so grateful that she asked that question, because we genuinely both believe wholeheartedly, which is why we committed ourselves to this project, mm-hmm. that these are essential skills that we need to have as flutists going into, you know, our current times, and then are the future of our field and the future of our performing and our pedagogy. So we wanted to be sure to reflect that idea that it's not just people who are interested in new music and contemporary music, but it really was this essential method that we hope that everyone will take a look at that can help you in multiple ways in your flute playing. And then the second one, we just laughed one day and we said, well, now we're going even deeper into the beyond. And then we said, great. Sounds like we have our title. So Beatboxing and Beyond, and then we're diving into the beyond.
I mean, for me, just when you say into the beyond, it's inquisitive. It makes me want to, into the beyond. Okay, what is the beyond? And it makes you then want to know more about the beyond.
And there's no turning back. Yeah. It's...
Right. Well, Mary and Nicole, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Flutes Extra this week. And to you lovely Talking Flutes podcast listeners, please don't forget to hunt out and buy, because these two publications are essential tutor books and will definitely open your eyes to possibilities, not only in extended techniques, but they will expand and improve your flute playing. And ultimately, we're here as artists, aren't we? We're here, every one of us listening to this, however we play, we have a valid performance. Every one of our sounds is valid. But we don't want to get bored. We want to have fun. If we look at Mary, she's always smiling, and Nicole's smiling. And if I had a cup the size of Nicole's, I'd be smiling as well. It's important that as musicians, we smile. And to smile, we have to enjoy what we're doing. And that sometimes means taking a path of exploration. And these two publications, and they're sure there's going to be more, is that path of exploration. So you can find these, Beatboxing Beyond and Into the Beyond by Dr. Mary Matthews and Nicole Chamberlain, from your favourite flute dealer, flute store, or via spottedrocket.com. Oh, do you know, I love that, spottedrocket.com. Spotted Rocket, I mean, you just have a way with words. All your compositions, Nicole, you have this way.
Thanks. I wish I could say that was my idea, the Spotted Rocket, but I had a Dalmatian when I was younger, took it to the vet, and the vet's like, wow, he must run like a spotted rocket, because he was just a very muscular dog.
Yeah, oh, how sweet.
I didn't know that story. I love that.
So I know you two are really busy ladies, and you've managed to join me from the other side of the pond early in the morning for you. It's late afternoon for me. So thank you so much for joining. And you know, next time I'm in the NFA or I'm in the States, then I'll get the little red cup out and
I'll bring my gallon of coffee.
Wishing you both a beautiful day. And I really hope that the second publication, In the Beyond, is as successful as the first one. And I look forward to speaking to you, if I'm still doing these podcasts, when the third one comes out.
Thank you for having us on. Yeah, it's great.
And good to see you. And thank you all for joining us this week. May your week ahead be musically fulfilling. And may your low C be especially in tune, because mine never is. Goodbye. Talking Flutes and Talking Flutes Extra are podcast productions by the Trevor James Flute Company. For more information, visit trevorjamesflutes.com.